you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
We're back. I'm David Roth. This is the Deadcast. That's Tim Marchman.
Hey, how you doing, Roth?
Pretty good, dude. I had an auspicious experience on the train recently where I saw a dog in a backpack in an unconventional format. Like, it was sideways, and it was exciting to see something like that, and it made me think that...
Wait, how is it sideways?
So, it's hard because this is not a visual medium, so I'm going to have to paint a picture using the power of words. But, so, you're familiar with the general way that one would wear a backpack,
mm-hmm.
right? So, on both shoulders. And the dog, ordinarily, if you've seen a dog in a backpack, would be body in the backpack, kind of vertical, little heads.
Yeah, vertically oriented,
yeah,
peeking up on the shoulders.
Yeah, that's if you want to use the technical term, yes, a vertically oriented dog. In this case, however, the dog is laterally oriented. And it was, I don't know exactly how, it must have been like some sort of bespoke backpack thing that had this. So I first noticed the tail of the dog hanging out the right dorsal side of the backpack, at which point I was made aware by my own keen sense of observation that a head was sticking out the other side. Yeah, and it was just a little guy hanging out in there. He seemed very chill about the whole thing. I don't know how you get a dog into a backpack that way.
What kind of dog was it?
It was kind of a...
Was it a long tubular dog?
Yes. If we're going to, again, if you want to use the terminology, I feel like a lot of our listeners are more into lay terms. Yes, it was a tube dog. I expected more dog. I expected more dog body because the distance between the tail and the head, it was kind of like a schnauzer head, but it was a very much smaller dog.
So how did the zipper work here? Because I'm imagining this tube-like dog,
yes,
in a backpack.
Mm-hmm. It's good, right?
It's
good
zippered, to imagine. It's zippered under against the belly, and then it has to be zippered over as well. So were there two zippers?
There must have been two zippers. Or there was some sort of hatch at the bottom. You load the dog through that hatch with the backpack, of course, in a different arrangement, upside down, and then close that hatch such that the dog is secured there and there's no zippers of any kind. You know what? I didn't ask the guy. I did take pictures of it, and I can show you those pictures, although, again, it wouldn't help the listeners much. But it was inspiring to me. I've seen a lot of dogs in backpacks over the last, couple of years, and those are generally my happiest moments.
I saw some unusual backpack portage myself recently. Last week, I came up to New York for the GMG holiday party on Friday, and then I spent part of my Saturday at Rockefeller Center, right by the tree, going to the American Girl place there.
How nice. That's just a little thing that you do for a little treat that you throw yourself every year around this time.
I'm sure, as you can imagine, was pretty easily the most pleasant experience I've had this year. But I hadn't previously noted this, but while I was knife fighting with like Azerbaijani tourists for what Santa is going to bring this year, there were little girls walking around in backpacks in which they carry their American girls around, which have like little portholes on them so that
you can see them peering out. It sounds intensely unsettling.
Yeah, and you see like little armies of small, tiny people wandering around with their little tiny doppelgangers peering out unblinking and judging, you know, looking at you and saying, you know, yes, get Tenny's dog.
This is, we should probably introduce our guest, Lauren Tyson, with us.
Oh, hey guys, do you want me to talk?
No, it's Tim and I are doing,
really just honored that you would invite me to up here to listen to you guys.
Would you mind
talk about
getting me in one of the Nest cafes?
Oh, that'd yeah.
No.
Just one second, Mr. Rock.
So, as I was going to say, new possibilities, a new season. It is our last Deadcast before Christmas, and I wanted to have a seasonal treat for the listeners, and Lauren, you will represent that for us.
Aw, thank you.
Lauren, have you seen anything unusual related to backpacks recently?
related to backpacks?
Yeah.
Or the holidays. So.
I was up at Rockefeller Center, though. I was up there last Sunday. It was pouring rain. I highly recommend it. Nobody shows up when it's pouring rain. No, it was absolutely miserable, but it was great. I mean, if you are wearing a hoodie, at least, which I was. I don't know. I am a dork, and I love the windows on Saks and at, like, Bergdorf Goodman and, like, all the department stores. So, yeah, that was, like, a really cool thing that made me happy, even though I was also very wet.
So both of you were...
So both of you
were doing the thing that you do at Christmas when your family is here, and yet neither of you had family with you.
That's absolutely correct.
Terrific, Tim.
It's still
no
nice.
Excuse. Just
I was doing.
I
the right
you were
thing.
Buying something. Nice.
I was I was buying something from a young daughter.
Yeah, that. I mean, that is. As somebody who grew up around here, I know Tim grew up in the city. I've not had to do a lot of the like sort of holiday shit that you need to do with your family around New York, which is fine. I mean, I've grown to like Christmas in New York quite a bit, but it's mostly because I don't ever have to like throw the fucking mosh surrounded by a bunch of like portly Austrians so I can see part of a Christmas tree. You know, like it's kind of simple. Lauren, have you had to like shepherd your parents around?
No, they haven't come up for Christmas yet. We kind of did a whole Midtown thing. They came in for the Big Ten tournament earlier this year.
I knew I remembered you talking about trying to do stuff with your parents in Midtown. I didn't recall that it involved like watching Rutgers play at 2 p.m.
It wasn't that. It was, you know, it was Michigan, and we'll get to that later. But yeah, they're sort of burned out on that already. They've done, you know, Broadway and that kind of thing. Now they're, like, wanting to learn more about Brooklyn, which is nice.
Yeah.
They'll probably, like, stay in Williamsburg or something the next time they come up.
That's good. Yeah. Man, that is advanced placement. I mean, as I said, again, my parents grew up around here. My mom graduated from high school in New York. I don't know that either one of them has taken the subway in, like, 35 years. So we'll see. It's good. If you get your parents on the G train, you'll have accomplished something
absolutely
really
yeah.
noble for all of us. Probably get to actually talking about sports.
Yeah, I had a smooth seg. Is you know one of the other wonderful things about the holidays are the long NBA preseason ends and the season begins.
We're not going to do this now. We're taking a break. You can express this diamond of an idea in just a moment.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back.
We're back. Yeah, sorry. Right. Go ahead. Continue your thought. I'm interested in where this is going.
Well, I don't know that this is a thought so much as just the expression of an obvious idea, which is that the NBA has this punishingly, brutally long preseason where, you know, they play the games at half speed. There are hundreds of people in the stands, but they broadcast it all on TV anyway, and it just drags on for months. And then, boom, Christmas Day, you get a feast of opening day action. You can check in on what's going on around the league, ignore your family, you know, and then just glut yourself with basketball.
That's intriguing. Lauren, do you want to?
I pretty much agree with that. I mean, I'm setting myself for like, I've been watching hockey the last 2 months, and hockey's regular season is maybe even more worthless than basketball's regular season. So I'd like, I'm going to own myself if I agree too much with Marchman, but like... Yeah, I haven't watched a ton of basketball.
Yeah, I was going to make the case for pre-Christmas basketball because I do watch it. And this, of course, the one inaccuracy that I was kind of hoping you might point out is that these games do actually count, of course, in the standings and towards the eventual playoff race. I actually looked it up on the way here. And yeah, they're keeping track of the standings. It's not like spring training where, you know, Jose Cruz Jr.'s batting title goes away at the end of March. Respect to Jose Cruz Jr., of course, longtime Deadspin reader and Deadcast listener. To me, it's very difficult to make a case for early season NBA basketball beyond the, like, the first couple weeks. I'm so happy that it's there.
Right.
And but, yeah, it's a strange thing, and it really brings home how long the NBA season is, that you can have these kinds of, like, ebbs and flows that, like, if it wasn't for the Christmas, you know, blowout of games all day long, like, you would be bored with the regular season, you know, sometime during the period between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Yeah. And then there's, like, two-thirds of the season left.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason a lot of people don't pay attention, and a lot of people do, like for some reason I'm not clear on, Albert Bernico is constantly live tweeting every fucking Wizards game.
That's something he needs to talk about with a professional.
You know, John Wall diving for loose balls against the Bulls.
It's really taking the loss of Kelly Oubre hard.
Yeah,
is that they play it at you know seriously. Half speed. I mean, a boring May baseball game before the season starts in June is still played at basically the same speed and intensity as, you know, a pennant race game. You get a little rundown because there are just so goddamn many of them.
Yeah.
Whereas in the NBA, they are actually completely visibly mailing it in, and not to be one of these, God damn it, they make $20 million. Why can't they play the game the way God intended? People, but it can be a little dire. Yeah.
I will say the Nets are a little bit fun last year. Like, did you watch the Nets game last night?
They're spunky. Yeah. I did not watch them last night, but they are. It's like the whole cycle of being bad as an organization is like they already went through the whole like failed shot at a title because of some like oafish 10-year out of date idea of what that means. Mm-hmm. Then they were terrible. They had a bad GM, and then they've like they're at the spunkiness point in the cycle where they're not, I think, like actively good yet.
Now, especially like, without LeVert.
Right. But they were good enough to beat the Lakers, yeah. And they were good enough to, you know, like Jared Allen packed LeBron basically down the stretch, which is something he'll remember his entire life.
And then later on in the game, LeBron missed a dunk where Allen was right in his face. Yeah. Like, he psyched out LeBron.
Right. And they're, but at the same time, like, the team is not good. I mean, it's like basically, you know, but it's fine to be at that stage. I mean, like, I think eventually if they ever do get good, and of course it's very difficult to do that, and one never knows, as somebody that has been a fan of Nets teams that covered this entire continuum back when they were in New Jersey. It's the ones that, like, steal one defiant win in an otherwise doomed playoff series that I remember most dearly. Like, more so than, like, whatever, Jason Kidd and Kenyon Martin going to the finals and getting their clocks clean.
Yeah, just having a team you can actually like is, like, a nice thing, and it gets you probably more into preseason NBA than it would otherwise. Like, the Pistons, I just do not have fun watching them. When Blake Griffin runs the point forward, he can be, you know, exciting and interesting, but otherwise they just look like trash.
Yeah, that's. I think maybe it's the not good teams that are, like the Nets, that have to, like, try real hard and find some way to compete that, like, benefit from this period before Christmas. Because, like, if everybody else is kind of, like, not mailing it in exactly, but, like, definitely pacing themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're the Nets, you cannot afford to pace yourself. Like, because you might only win 22 games a year, so
yeah,
you have
fighting
to get
for that
them.
18.
Right, you have to get them whenever you can.
So who are you two looking forward to watching more as we round into the part of the season where we, all of us, watch more NBA?
The NBA watching public.
I'm looking forward to seeing what's up with the Sacramento Kings.
Oh,
yeah, that's interesting. You don't hear very much about the Kings in our work Slack. Nobody talks about them. Nobody gangly and red, I'll tell you that much. The Kings are actually cool. They're at that, like, spunky bad stage to me.
I would say De'Aaron Fox is cool. I don't know that the Kings are cool.
They're kind of cool. They're not.
Who else?
Like Bagley's fun when he plays. Like, I think that there's interesting stuff there. Willie Cauley-Stein only does cool things, and this year has started doing them, like, concurrently, you know, instead of, like, periodically or intermittently.
I'm just waiting for you to try to sell me on Harry Giles.
I can't sell you on Harry Giles. And I also think that Buddy Hield is my favorite type of not,
I like Buddy
of
Hield.
Not
okay.
useful NBA yeah. player, because he's, like, dude loves to shoot. He's never happier than when he's getting a contested three up. And, you know, I don't play a lot of pickup basketball anymore, but I, not to give away too much of what I'm personally like, I can relate to that shit very much. But, yeah, I mean, the Kings are, you know, whatever. We'll see when, like, the good teams start playing well. We'll see what happens. But the whole Western Conference, a lot of the teams that I expected to be, if not fun to watch, then at least frustrating in interesting ways.
The Rockets?
Yeah, the Rockets or, you know, or the Warriors have all been kind of like, it's all bunched up, and no team has really looked extra good, including the Warriors somehow.
Yeah, I mean, the Nuggets look good. Yes. I mean, it's impossible to take any team in the West seriously besides the Warriors. But, I mean, Nikola Jokic is incredible. Like, he just wants to be Magic Johnson, and I'm totally okay with that.
Magic Johnson, but without, like, having to do, like, upper body exercises. Like, what if Magic Johnson didn't have to do push-ups?
I have many decades of just not being able to take the Nuggets remotely seriously. So it's been a difficult adjustment period
for me. I'm not saying you should
now. What was the first Nuggets team that you remember identifying as bullshit before other people did? Let's date yourself a little bit here.
I don't know. I have memories of, like, high-socked Nuggets players in packs of basketball cards and maybe like 1988 and just say, these guys are bullshit.
You're like, Blair Rasmussen, son of a bitch.
Yeah, I'm going to look up a roster for a second and maybe we can...
Well, there's one Nuggets team that I have been fascinated by and which I'll probably be writing about in the new year once the basketball season begins that I think of as being... I remember it because the season happened when I was 13 years old, but I remember it as if it was in a dream. Literally, this team played before you were born, Lauren. So you can leave if you'd like.
Yeah, or I can get you that coffee.
Or I can tell you about... So it's no team has ever played faster in the history of basketball than the 91-92 Nuggets. That includes teams playing now. It includes the Contempo Kings. It includes the Warriors of like a couple years ago. They brought in Paul Westhead, who'd been coaching Loyola Marymount, like the Hank Gathers, Bo Kimble teams, which kind of revolutionized college basketball. But they hired him in September, and they gave him just the roster from the year before, which was all the fucking high sock guys that Tim was cursing about pulling out of basketball card packs. And so they tried to play – they played, you know, whatever, at like a 120 rate with – Blair Rasmussen, and like they traded for like Orlando Woolridge, but it was like a bunch, like Joe Wolf was on that roster, like white guys with haircuts that they gave themselves were trying to take like 12 threes a game, and they were terrible, and they made a lot of people really mad. There's a lot of quotes from the period of like Larry Brown being like, well, that's just not basketball. But they were just early.
Yeah. Well, earlier in the 80s, the Nuggets and the Pistons played like a 3-overtime game. That's still like the highest scoring game in NBA history. And like, I know 3 overtimes, but honestly, I cannot believe that record has not been broken yet.
It is pretty weird that because you'd think there's definitely games you'd watch like just a random TNT game after you watch like the first quarter and you're like, this is it. This is the game that's going to end like 206 to 198.
Yeah.
But never quite gets there. Tim, have you got a roster you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I was looking at a couple of rosters, and I think basically the teams we're talking about are the ones with, like, Fat Lever and Alex English, surrounded by a bunch of guys whose names I was just looking at, and I think calling high-socked guys is like, really was the appropriate descriptor.
Is Fat Lever his real name?
Yes. Lafayette Lever is his real name. He's the coolest. Yeah. See, those teams... I don't want to get off on a remembering some guys rant here, but those Fat Lever, and then he was later replaced on the bad 91-92 team that West head coached was the Michael Adams show. And it was all these Michael Adams was like 5'10". He was a pioneer in wearing like kind of weird, basically tights under his shorts. Okay. He took 8.5 threes per game that year and made like 30% of them. He was generally a lot better than that, but he was like, again, kind of a proto gunner. There were all those guys on that team. That was the first year of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf back when he was Chris Jackson was on that team too. All these guys that were basically like 2014 NBA players that happened to be stuck playing during like George H.W. Bush's presidency. And it didn't generally go well for them. At least Fat Lever got, like, many buckets over the course of his career.
Yes.
Going back to current and good teams, I'm really excited about the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, I think they're second in the East right now.
Another funny Raptors. Thing about the Nuggets of 91-92. Sorry, go ahead.
Shut the f- Anyway, as I was saying, the Raptors are leading the East. I can't take the Raptors seriously because even though Casey is gone and DeRozan is gone, they're still the fucking Raptors. But the Bucks look really good. I mean, they have... 4 guys who are, like, very good at three-point shooting. Yeah, Brooke Lopez and Brogdon and Middleton and who's the other guy?
Bledsoe. Dante? Oh, right. Eric Bledsoe.
And all those guys can shoot threes, and then the 5th guy is Giannis. Like, that's an incredible lineup, and I want to see them playing at full speed soon.
What I'm excited about is I was just pulling up the Christmas schedule so that we could maybe discuss that a little bit. Any games we're excited for? And the first game is Bucks versus Knicks. As a Knicks fan, I'm really looking forward to seeing my team get slaughtered while I'm still in my bathrobe.
That'll be an interesting first half.
Yeah, by, you know, they'll run it up by a good 20 by the half. And then they'll roll out some guys. And I'll just sit there muttering while, you know.
Bring out DJ Wilson.
While my daughter gripes about not having a special backpack for her new doll.
They have portholes, Dad.
We've also got Thunder Rockets, which does not look to be as exciting as
could have been cool.
The schedule makers.
Okay, though. I mean, Paul George is like playing really well,
best,
I think.
Best player in the NBA right now, which is weird, but not that weird, but a little weird.
It's not entirely unexpected.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he's been fantastic. And the Thunder, it's weird. Like, I kind of was ready for them to like decline into this like Russell Westbrook plus dudes. And like, they're still pretty sassy, you know?
Yeah.
Capable of beating anybody, which I guess is where they would be if it was Russell Westbrook plus dudes. But yeah, George is cool. Rockets are even more enervating than usual.
The battle of teams that didn't want Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, at least I'll bond over something in the course of the game.
We've got a 76ers Celtics, which is coming at 5:30, and I think might result in
fighting?
Some sort of fighting in my neighborhood.
Yeah. Your neighborhood. I was thinking on the court. Like that's a rivalry I'd actually really like to see.
On the court, it could definitely result in some fighting. That's definitely
really peppy. In your neighborhood, are there rival gangs?
People
called the smart boys that wear Marcus Smart jerseys around?
No, it's not like there's some detachment of Celtics fans so much as people are really into the Sixers.
Oh, so, that makes sense.
You know, I'm figuring about that time on Christmas when everybody's gotten into the
nog,
the port,
hitting that nog
a little bit much.
Turned off the nog.
There might be some excitement. So we're all jazzed for that one. Then Lakers-Warriors.
The Lakers are weird. Because I'm used to there being, like, constant drama around, like, LeBron's teams, or at least around the Cavs. Like, he was always kind of trying to push to, like, get better players or just, like, yell at the coach. Not yell, but kind of push the coach or the GM to do more. And now he seems pretty chill with what he's got because he knows it's not going to compete for
you
a couple of years.
That, like, active retiree lifestyle.
Yeah.
Which is
the word retirement,
good.
Really. kind of comes to mind.
I mean, he still plays. It's funny, though, because he's, like, he's still the best basketball player on earth, which makes it funny because he'll be, like, kind of spend some games, like, playing, just, like, kind of just paging through his phone. But then, like, something makes him mad.
Mm.
And then suddenly he's, like, abruptly, like, dunking everyone's faces and, like, yelling at the opposing team's coach. But then, like, then he just becomes, like, sort of docile again because he remembers that, like, he's got a wine tasting tomorrow that he's excited about.
Yeah, he's California LeBron now.
Yeah, which is good. I respect that. I think we should all aspire
to me too.
California LeBronhood.
And we wrap up with Blazers versus Jazz, which...
No.
I don't know. It's not so bad. Yeah. I like to see, as somebody that doesn't like to go to bed and doesn't have children or, super early in the day responsibilities, I like watching West Conference basketball. I like the Blazers. They're sassy.
Do you like the Jazz?
No. I watched a Jazz Nets game in person, and Donovan Mitchell is badass, but the rest of that team is kind of not.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Someone was really mailing it in there.
Yeah, I think that's, it's, you gotta, again, like, you start on a high note, like with the Knicks at breakfast time. By the end of the day, it's gonna be hard to, you gotta keep your powder dry.
This has to be the first Christmas in a while that doesn't have a finals rematch. The Cavs don't get in there.
Yeah, it's too bad. Give the gift
doesn't
of Larry
it, though,
Nance Jr.
With Lakers Warriors.
Oh, yeah, fair.
Suppose. Wait. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I was going to say, like, the interesting parts of that Cavs team. If you're sad that you're not getting the chance to watch Rodney Hood just dribble a single tear down his cheek, then, you know, that's once the season gets going, of course, there'll be plenty of that. Take a break, talk about a different kind of basketball on the other side of it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And we're the hosts of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. On The Upgrade, we help you improve your life one week at a time. We talk to guests like former hacker Hector Monsegur about online security.
You need to be aware of how you could be attacked. You need to be aware of what's your weakness.
And Alan Alda on how to communicate more effectively.
And in order to achieve that, we start with teaching exercises derived from improvisation.
And sex therapist Steven Snyder about how to have great sex in a long-term relationship.
What really works under those circumstances is if you enjoy the other person selfishly.
Hey, your life? It's terrible. We can help.
Find The Upgrade wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. We've talked about professional basketball, but there is another type of basketball that's gaining popularity among the youth, in which the players are not paid.
Mm.
And it's one that Lauren's very keen to talk about. Any college basketball teams you burning on this year, Lauren Tyson?
Duke looks good. Kansas looks good. And oh yeah, obviously the University of Michigan looks absolutely amazing. Iggy Brazdeikis is like going to be the number one. Iggy Brazdeikis.
Yeah, that's great. Sounds great when you say it.
Obviously going to be the number one pick in the draft next year. It's incredible that we even get him for
this
season.
You do hear it more and more. So many are saying could be even higher than the first pick in the draft.
You know, as a fellow enthusiast, I got to say, it's really an incredible thing to watch a Michigan player who clearly will translate to the pros, which isn't something even some very good teams over
really
the last while
teams.
Have had.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan's thing is like taking three stars and turning them into like first-round draft picks who don't necessarily really pan out. Caris LeVert probably accepted from that. But yeah, Brazdeikis looks like actually good, like right from the start as a freshman, which is like relatively rare.
And also very much still like a Michigan recruit, right? In the sense that he's like a Lithuanian-Canadian or something like that. That they like.
He's like Mo Wagner, but like a little bit smaller.
Yeah,
I guess.
He's like noticed as a tall guy in the casino in Windsor, and they were like, "Oh, okay, what? Can you dribble?" And like, yes, he can. Turns out they. I don't want to. I can't pretend to not care about Michigan basketball. My sister went there. I like them. I like Beeline System. I always have, and that is like a fun team. I'm kind of honestly looking forward to college basketball in the way that you all were talking about the NBA. It's a lot to keep track of. I do still care about college basketball, but I can't. Not until like I clear some work shit and like get some rest over the holiday can I afford to like learn about Furman.
Yeah, Big Ten and ACC will be like both really good conference play to care about. Big Ten especially will be really competitive because Michigan State, Purdue looks okay. Indiana
Rutgers.
Looks okay.
Rutgers.
Who?
The Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey. They, let's just say that they might irritate some of the less good but generally conceived to be good teams this year. Rutgers is spunky. They're all right.
Irritate?
Welcome back to Rutgers chat. Yeah, yes, irritate.
I think my favorite thing about Rutgers is when you're watching like the Big Ten Network and they have the propaganda ads that come on, and Rutgers is always just wildly out of place. The rest, they roll out the marching bands. Here we are at the horseshoe, and Rutgers, they just have like
Does Rutgers have a big drum? Am I making that up?
They do not have a big drum.
They have cannons that they fire. Do they have something after touchdowns?
In football games?
Yeah.
They don't score touchdowns. I don't remember.
Oh.
They do. After a field goal, everybody sighs. But yeah, Rutgers, I mean, I personally love those commercials that universities make for themselves that then air during sporting events just because you can really see what a school kind of thinks of itself. Like all the SEC schools advertise themselves like vacation destinations, which is great. Mm. And then I remember Kentucky's. I used to have number of friends that are Kentucky basketball fans. I used to watch a lot of games with them. They used to have an ad in which they called themselves America's Next Great Public University, which I liked because it implied that it was like one of those like work in progress gifs on like an early web page where they were like, we're on it. Like, this is it. Watch this space. Like, which I really respect. That was like the Tubby Smith years too. So they were kind of like, you know, like we're not going to put on airs and brag to you or anything like that. But beyond, obviously, your partisan interests in Michigan, can you give a listener a reason to watch college basketball once the season begins, of course, after the holiday?
I mean, Duke is like, me to say this, they're really good.
And fun.
Zion Williamson just like creates highlights, and he like may not even be the best player on his own team.
Yeah.
Because RJ Barrett is like just as good a scorer, at least.
Yeah, and that's the top three recruits in the country on the same roster, adequately coached. But I don't remember the coach's name, but he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's... the puppet from Saw. is leading that team. But Zion is incredible. He bonked his head on the damn backboard last night, blocking a shot.
Like everything he does is ridiculous.
But that is, I think it makes sense that, you know, as we approach the end of the one and done years, that we have a Duke team that actually is appealing. Like, this all feels like an apotheosis of something. I don't really know what.
I really want to see more from Kansas, though, too. They're almost like an anti-Duke.
Yeah.
Because their main guy is this guy, Dedrick Lawson, who's like, his comp is like Tim Duncan. Like, he doesn't really shoot threes. He just sort of like gets two-pointers and rebounds somehow, despite not looking very athletic at all. And he pairs with this guy, Udoka Azubuike, who hasn't played that much yet. But he's like just like a seven-foot big man who's like amazingly good at that. And they don't, they just like don't really shoot threes. They're a little bit boring, maybe some might say. But I really would love to see them match up against Duke.
You're making this sound exceptionally appealing to me. I'm going to have to make some time on the schedule for...
There is some fun stuff about... The fun part about Kansas, I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not there.
I haven't watched them, and that's actually... Those are my favorite kind of players. Yeah. Those and people who punch people in the face.
Yeah. You know. Boring college bigs and actual sociopaths, which is good. They got it all. This club has everything. To me, the most interesting thing about Kansas so far this year has been the personal conflict between Bill Self and LeGerald Vick, who he hates but needs, which is a very like Bill Self sort of thing, because the dude loves to just like bury guys on a whim. But he needs to have LeGerald Vick, who he does not like, or else his team is just a pair of kind of milquetoasty college pigs.
Otherwise, without LeGerald Vick, they all have to play in the paint, basically. Yeah. Like, there's just no three-point line.
Which is, you know, I think...
It's a choice.
Yeah. The argument that I've always made for college basketball against people that argue against it, beyond, obviously, of course, you can't make, like, an ethical or political argument for it. It's inexcusable. But it is just a sort of... It doesn't track quite in the way that like college football is worse but more fun to watch than NFL football, but there's something unfinished and kind of cool about how weird the styles can be, because the players are, you know, not professional grade for the most part, and so there is like sort of some formal variation there that can be fun to watch, which is part of what makes Michigan fun too.
There's just like so many options. I mean, like, imagine if the NBA had like 20 to 30 teams who are like at least arguably interesting. Like, that'd be better.
That's a pretty cold burn on the NBA right there.
The NBA just doesn't have that many teams. Like, there's just, you have a lot of choices with college basketball.
Yeah. Also, college basketball does permit me a grace that the NBA does not, in that all the games that air late at night from the West Coast are terrible, so I can go to bed instead of feeling like I need to watch the Blazers.
Speaking of which, before we enter the fun bag, Roth, I was under the impression you had some Pac-12 takes.
Oh, just that it's really bad. And that I'm fascinated by how bad it's become. I know that.
Do you have any take on Nevada? I can't say I've watched Nevada this year.
I mean, I remember them from the tournament last year.
I know they're
year.
Not Pac-12.
Yes. But, well, know. I mean, they're the best they're like team, a West Coast team in that time zone, which is something that I imagine is acutely painful to Pac-12 fans. But, well, Gonzaga is the best team in that time zone. But, I mean, they're both quite good. And yet, like, all the teams with the bigger profiles and in many cases with, like, the actual five-star dudes are just kind of wan and lame. Like, I watched Arizona lose to, I believe, Gonzaga, and they were at least spunky, but like Oregon's confused, like USC and UCLA look miserable and have played miserably, and like USC's got the Gulf Coast guy coaching it, that's Andy Enfield. Like, you should have fun playing that system, and yet also they get to live in Los Angeles. I don't know if it's they don't enjoy like the things that I enjoy about Los Angeles, but I would love to, and this is, you know, I don't want to leave my job, but as like a sort of a leave of absence, I would go to USC and take those guys to like strange regional Chinese restaurants and try to convince them of how magical it is to be in Los Angeles and that they should try to enjoy themselves.
You'd use specifically strange Chinese restaurants to make that case?
Yeah, I would do. Well, you know, it depends.
Is this like that movie where John Cryer is an evil stockbroker and he hides out?
Is it called, that one's called like Hiding Out, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, he has a beard. He shaves the beard. He goes back to high school. But with you teaching UCLA to enjoy Los Angeles and so rediscover their love of basketball.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Yeah, that's something like that. Yeah, so it would be like a cross between, like in the movie version of it, I'd be played by the Bizarre Foods guy probably, just because he's better on film than I am.
And then UCLA ends up defeating Michigan in the national championship game in like absolutely heartbreaking fashion while you triumph. And
it'd be nice. Say, yeah, but then I like slip on a pool of chili oil near their bench or something like that. It's not, I'm not done with the concept yet, but obviously I'm reachable and I'm interested. So I was thinking like low to high millions for the story concept. We're going to discuss this more in the break, and then we're going to come back and open the fun bag and never speak of it again. We're back. We're going to open the fun bag and read what's in the fun bag. Lauren, you
are going to answer it too?
First, only if you want.
Okay. Yeah, let's get to it.
But our first question, Lauren, you will be answering first, but this one does kind of feel directed at you.
Okay.
It's from Victor. Victor writes, "For whatever reason, Detroit doesn't feel like a Michigan city to me. It's not like Austin or another blue city in a red state. There's just some undefinable feeling I get where I'm always surprised to hear Detroit is in Michigan. I also get this feeling about Milwaukee. What city do you think fits worst or most awkwardly in the state it resides? And which one fits the best? Tampa feels like the front runner in this category," he adds.
Is that a real question or are you trying to bait me?
That's a real... Laura's levitating about a foot off her chair right now. Yeah, no, that's a real question from Victor.
Okay, so the inclusion of Milwaukee... the inclusion of Milwaukee in there tells you all you need to know, which is that Victor, I don't blame him at all, but he thinks of the Midwest as Hicksville and like can't really compute that there are also like good, fun urban centers within that region.
Like Detroit.
But I also understand it. Like when you kind of learn what all the states are, you get like one thing for each of them. Like Michigan's is like it's shaped like a mitten. And that's just like what I assume people know about Michigan if they've never been. Or like, I don't know, Minnesota has lakes. Wisconsin has cows. Like you get one thing per state, basically.
It's an extremely Michigander answer that the thing you think everybody thinks about Michigan is that it's shaped like a mitten, which all children are taught in schools. Yeah. No, you think of there's a huge lake, Lake Michigan. You think of like that stuff. Maybe you think of a sports team. Like if you're, I mean, they haven't been that good in a while. But when I was a kid and I thought of Michigan, I thought of like Sparky Anderson.
Well, you're weird.
I know.
I don't think that's
we've been over
thing.
This. This is not. But I do think that there's something in here that doesn't 100% track with me in terms of
none of this
cities fitting
this
states.
This is fucking batshit.
I'm sympathetic to it. I will say, even though it feels targeted right at me.
I can't think of any. I would actually put Milwaukee and Detroit as two of the cities that most like fit in and express their states like perfectly.
And also like illustrate their states' particular neuroses, like in the sense that they are like. The state's politics are all geared against, like, half the state running against those cities.
Yeah, like, the idea of Michigan having a, in some ways, stunningly beautiful and in some ways sort of rotting out, you know, metropolis right there is not uncharacteristic. There's a lot about Michigan that you will not see in Detroit, but that's not Michigan. And... yeah, you know, Wisconsin is a state with a huge amount of its population and a couple of urban centers where the rest of the state is convinced that because they're a geographically small area and because they're black, they don't need to be paid any attention to or considered part of the state. So you would say that, you know, Milwaukee and Madison are places you would really find that definitional quality of Wisconsin.
Yeah,
right
that
now.
Is what's funny is that that's not. I mean, that is astute analysis, but also basically a direct quote from the head of the Wisconsin State House of Representatives. Great guy, Robin Vose. Please come on the Deadcast. Huge
yeah,
fans
we would,
of your shit.
We would love to have.
Was
him.
There a second part to that question?
The city that fits its state the best. Now, I think we've sort of decided that actually Detroit and Milwaukee fit their states very well.
Yeah,
but
I would say this is also just sort of me only being able to compute like one city per state. But I think Pittsburgh fits my idea of Pennsylvania really well, and Philadelphia is like basically New Jersey to me.
That is spicy. I don't agree with it, but goddamn do I respect it.
I don't really see that. I guess it depends on what parts of Philly you're in because the borders between Philly and, you know, the great sprawling central mass of Pennsylvania are very porous and they run into each other very quickly. So you can like jog out of Philadelphia into the country. Mm. And when you see it that way, it feels very, very, very much, you know, part of Pennsylvania. But on the other hand, it basically is the capital of New Jersey. We shouldn't.
Yeah. I say this with the caveat that I've spent probably a total of 5 days in each city combined. Yeah. But I don't know. I think of Pittsburgh as like sort of the working class steel town, which is how I think of like all of that region. And then Philly is like, I think of it as a party city at least.
I mean, it's a party city. It's just you may not want to go to the party.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Is
Boston too obvious an answer here?
Boston, you
couldn't get any more Massachusetts.
I know, yeah. Which is tough. I mean, it is really like the capital of a certain type of, you want to say certain type of white people, but really it's just like everything about that region that is like problematic, but then also kind of backhandedly endearing at moments, Boston fits. For me, Minneapolis and Minnesota really fits just in the sense that it's like, I mean, again, like it fits in the way that you guys were talking about it, that there's something about Minneapolis that sums up the few things about Minnesota that I know in terms of it being like, if you had to make a city out of the attributes that comprise that state, like obviously you'd wind up leaving certain things out because certain things don't fit into cities, but like it's there. It is like the expression of a certain type of Minnesotan-ness that fits. I also feel like, and I have not been there, but in my mind, I've always thought of generally of Arizona as being completely feral and psychotic, and then for Phoenix being the perfect encapsulation.
I could definitely agree with that. I guess I've been to Phoenix and Glendale and the various other cities that are part of Phoenix, but they call them other things for reasons I'm not clear on. I haven't spent any time in the rest of Arizona, but it certainly feels like the rest of the state must be something that those cities are expressing that's like, very bad.
Right, like you couldn't have
terrifying.
Phoenix unless there was something really wrong percolating at some lower level in there. We have one more question. It is our Trump question of the week, and it is from Mitch, and it's simple. It does not involve having to reconceive how you think of states or cities. It is, how many different Christmas songs do you think Donald Trump has heard or knows?
Has heard, I would say pretty much like all of the heavy hitters, just because like they're inescapable.
Yeah, and he spends a lot of time in like dining rooms.
Yeah, I think if you just imagine Trump like at a rally just sort of naming off the Christmas songs that he's going to bring back, you start with Jingle Bells. Like I don't think he knows the words to Jingle Bells. I would love to see him try, but like that's a pretty easy one. I bet he says Rudolph. I'm not really sure where he goes after that.
Yeah, there's probably
it's like the ones that like kids learn. Carol to their parents when they're in second grade.
I think he knows the kids' ones, and I think he knows any that, like, Peggy Lee may have done a novelty version of in the 50s. But
Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, he loves that shit. He knows all the words to that.
I don't think he knows anything with any religious basis.
Yeah.
Like Silent Night, I think he would just draw a complete blank. It's actually one of, to me, the funniest, and I don't know if endearing's the word, but charming things about him is just complete, utter ignorance of anything religious on any level.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know, I forget what the exact quote was, but it was quite clear, like, he wasn't sure what the difference between the Old and the New Testament was.
He's like, both terrific, so good. You hear, you know, I think they're actually exactly the same as each other.
I would actually want to know, like, what he thinks Christmas celebrates. Like,
yeah,
do you think he knows, like, the meaning of the holiday?
I think it's, like, he thinks it's about, like, success and, like, treating yourself. Like, I think this is what's...
People giving him gifts.
Right, yeah. He's, like, every year, you know...
parties. Yeah. So many crab legs.
Yeah. Right,
like, he believes the snow clusters.
Like, he's the one dude that, like, you know, like the Lexus December to Remember ship where there's a car with a bow on it? Like, that's him. Like, he does that. Like, he'll give somebody, like, a car that has a bow on it and be like, knock yourself out. Great. Which is, you know, kind of good that way. That is definitely – his faithlessness is – again, you wouldn't say it's, like, endearing. And I thought you were going to say, like, his dad brain thing of just, like, getting the names of everything wrong, that he'd, like, start doing the lyrics to Silent Night and then just start ad-libbing and be, like, you know, terrific, like, Yasmin Bleef. But, like, he's got his, like, him, like, waving around a Bible at a rally and being like, you guys love this book, right? Don't you? I bet you do. Like, it's just one of my favorites of him. Also, the one wild card entry that I will put in here is I think that some stern German governess of his youth sang like O Tannenbaum to him in the original. And so that's in there. There's some like Bavarian.
My sort of
Christmas
wild card
song
is going to be Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time. Because I'm sure he like respects Paul McCartney and like is in love with him.
Right. I mean, but also considers him like a rival, where he's like, I also, of course, have written many great songs, popular songs. I was in the video for Bobby Brown's song from Ghostbusters 2.
I'll throw out another wild card, which I think Mariah Carey as a person might be like we assume his brain shut off around 1991, 1992. Mm-hmm. She might sneak under the wire there. So he might be aware of like
the beautiful singer of emotions.
He might be aware of one of Mariah Carey's Christmas classics.
Which is good, because those are the best Christmas songs to me. There's another one, a second one that is not maybe as good. I saw a Hallmark movie for our Hallmark podcast based around that song that Mariah directed. It's kind of a passion project.
Based around All I Want for Christmas Is You?
No, based around another one. Other Christmas song, because she's put out like four Christmas albums, like the way that everybody that puts out one Christmas album, like if you've done one, you've done five. It's just how that business works. Mm-hmm. But yeah, All I Want for Christmas Is You is the one that like I think is actually like a jam, and I love that song very much. The second one is just mostly her singing really
What's it
fast.
Called?
I don't even remember. What I remember is I'll put it in the blog once I look it up. It's very, very fast. It's like a very show-off-y song. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, got
19
talent.
Octaves.
Right, and it is 100% like the sort of the 19 octave show. Also like a breath control joint. Mm. Like that there's like the first line's got like 25 words in it and it's two sentences long, but she's able to make that work. But yeah, the idea of Trump on Mariah Carey is something we should maybe do like a special emergency dead cast on at some point. Just like, what does he think of her? Does he know her? Have they met? Because I feel like there's a lot there to unpack. But I also think we're probably out of time for this one. So I guess this will be happy holidays from the Deadcast to all of you.
Yeah, happy holidays, guys.
Be safe. We hope everyone has a wonderful and safe holiday and doesn't drink and drive.
Yeah, don't do that. Seriously. There is alcohol in that nog. I know you're loving it. I bet you guys love that shit. But yeah, be responsible. The show is produced by our executive director of audio, Mondana Mafidi. We featured music by Corbin Hayes, and the episode was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. If you've got a question you'd want to send us, you should send a voice note or email to deadcast@deadspin.com or tweet at Deadspin using the hashtag Deadcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Panoply, NPR One, and wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.